Hey guys, my name is Amy Coonan, and I am a millennial on a mission to eat, clean, cook, dress, and live more sustainably. It's because of that I'm also the host of The Town Hall, Rubicon's first and only podcast where we share sustainability stories from the industry's influencers and the biggest brands. Jam-packed with tips, tricks, and need-to-know info for those that want to do better for the planet but may not know where to start. We are covering it all. Last year, we spoke to some incredible people who are doing some incredible things for our planet. The executive director of the Leonardo DiCaprio Foundation, the CEO of Seven Generation Cleaning Products, and one of the brains behind environmental sustainability in the NBA. This season, we're kicking it up a notch. Don't forget to download and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or iHeartRadio so that you don't miss a minute. And if you can't catch us on your commute or you don't download directly, don't stress. You can check out our website at rubiconglobal.com/townhallpodcast for recaps, reviews, and all things Town Hall. Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Town Hall. We're going to shift gears a little bit today and talk about a topic that I think we've only covered maybe once before on The Town Hall. I think it was June of 2018, and that's sustainability in the world of sports. And I will say, the last guy that came on here to talk about, you know, green sports was incredible. And you have some big shoes to fill, but it was my dad, disclosure. So I'm biased, but I can promise that this episode will be very inspiring and a wonderful way to feel a little bit of passion while we're all in this big sports-free drought during COVID-19. So welcome, my guest, Shane Keough.
Thank you. Thank you. Happy to be here, Amy. Appreciate it.
Okay, let's start off pretty easy. Full disclosure, I do kind of feel like I knew you a little bit even before we met because I did watch you on The Real Housewives of Orange County. But for those listening who may not be familiar with a very unique career trajectory, walk us through kind of your personal and professional timeline, all the stuff that you've been doing, and then where do you think you can pinpoint like a sparked passion for environmental sustainability?
Yeah, well, no, that's not a broad question at all. I guess in short, I grew up around the world of sports. My grandfather, my father, actually my aunt, my great uncle all played professional sports in some capacity, whether it was baseball, Olympic volleyball. So the world of sports has literally been a part of my DNA and a part of everything I've really ever done since I can remember. I got done playing baseball myself in 2010. I was in the minor league organization. Luckily, because of sports, because of my father taking our family to Japan when I was a baby during the Major League Baseball strike, I got to grow up in Japan a little bit in Kobe. My father played for the Hanshin Tigers, and just seeing and interacting with just such a different culture. Everything was done differently. Travel was done differently. Family and friendly gatherings were done differently. I grew up going to the zoo basically every day. So my affinity for animals and just understanding that people really helped each other. A community is really the important aspect of anybody really growing into what they want to be. And so when I got done playing, it was 2010, I'm sitting in the mirror and just didn't really know what I wanted to do. And when you have time to reflect, you look back. And one of the things I really looked back into was my proximity to waste. Now, most people, their proximity to waste is either they're throwing it in the trash or they're lugging their bin out to the curb, or, you know, maybe they're, bugged out that a big utility truck is going down their street and getting in the way of everything. They own the landfills. They own the trucks, the routes, the contracts. They all had big old houses and private jets and nice trucks, and I always saw the benefits of trash. So when I got done playing in 2010, I said, you know, that's something I want to get into. I don't know how or where, what it's going to look like, but I know that the world of waste is what I want to do. I need to figure out what that means and how I can personalize it. And just like someone else who didn't know what the heck they're doing, you just kind of dive in and you realize that it is really transcends every aspect of life at your work, at your house, at your local bar, at the local sports park. Waste is everywhere. And I really just saw that there were so many opportunities to angle it in a different direction or show people that simply that stuff you're throwing away is valuable. It's a commodity. Why do you think Waste Management, Rubicon Global, and all these huge companies exist is because waste is valuable. I don't know, Gandhi, a few other people kind of said variations of it, but waste is a resource misplaced. And I've really kind of stuck to that and really been focused on showing people their themselves, their businesses, their way of life in a new perspective so they could hopefully see what they do and how they go about their day in a different way. So, you know, sports, I grew up around the entertainment space. My mother was an actress and a Playboy playmate. I, you know, have been on sets and have just seen what teamwork looks like in different capacities, whether it's on a field or in a production room or in a round table read for scripts. It's an important aspect that I think a lot of companies struggle with. So, you know, in a big broad stroke, I really just wanted to find a way to show people what they were doing in a different way and then give them opportunities to connect with organizations that they could then kind of power each other, just like any good team would do. You know, point guard's great, but if you don't got someone to throw a lob to or to set a good screen, you're kind of just out there running around aimlessly. So I hope that answered the question. It was, you know, it's a lot there. There's a lot of family history that kind of goes in and out of sports and waste and, you know, what that looks like. But those are kind of some of the things that got me there. And truth be told, the spark, again, comes back to sports. 2013, my grandfather is working for the St. Louis Cardinals. He's been working with them since like the 50s or 60s or something. He's got a lot of years in the game. And they called me the day they're leaving to go to the St. Louis to watch the World Series game. And they said, Shane, our neighbors were supposed to watch the dog. Things happen. They can't. Would you mind coming out to Phoenix and watching the dogs, just taking care of the house for 2 or 3 days while we're gone? Yeah, sure, Grandma. You know, I'm still in and out of trying to figure out what I'm doing my life after baseball. So I head out there and I go to hit some golf balls in a driving range nearby. And a younger gentleman walks up and goes, you know, I don't know you, obviously, but my partner's got stuck at the airport. Everything's paid for. Would you like to come play? You know, I'm 25 years old, $150 a round. I don't have to pay. That sounds great. Let's go ahead and play. And for those of you that play golf, you're stuck with somebody for 3.5-4 hours. So you get a lot of time to talk. And, you know, he was in the solar development space. And, you know, that just took me down such a rabbit hole. And all of a sudden I got into, you know, waste incineration and solar concentration and all these crazy things that took me to France. And LinkedIn brought me to partnerships from around the world. And all of a sudden I'm sitting here talking to you, trying to figure out how to change the world. So was that enough?
Yes, that was great. And before we get into kind of everything that you're doing now, I did want to kind of back up and talk about waste a little bit. I saw on your Instagram, like right before the pandemic, you had a chance to go visit a landfill. And obviously, mm-hmm. you know, being in the industry, I think that I can be a bit jaded at times because these are issues and images and videos and kind of experiences that we talk about all the time. But, you know, for people who don't know how sobering a moment that can be, like, what is a landfill? What surprised you about being at a landfill? What was that like?
Yeah, it's one of those things that you think you're prepared for. You can look at videos, you can look at pictures, you can look at, you know, diagrams of how they're constructed and all those things. But when you're really there and you're standing on what you think is just a normal like hillside, and you're looking down to this big ravine where they're dumping, they got the trucks coming in, and you're talking to the lady who's giving you the tour, and she goes, well, that's the basin there. And when that's done, it'll be as high as where we're standing now. And you kind of look at her, you're like, wait a second, like, what do you mean? She goes, well, that basin down there is visually the low point, but there's actually another 10 stories of waste and fill underneath that. And she goes, just so you have an understanding, where you're standing is 15 stories above like the baseline. So you're thinking about it, you're like, wait a second, I'm on a 30-story building of trash and fill, and they're only, you know, 30% filled at this landfill. We went to several, actually, and a couple material recovery facilities. And when you really see where these minuscule half-second choices we make between one trash or another bin or a plastic bottle or a reusable bottle, it's hard to really understand what those choices mean until you see where they end up and you see people siphoning through different waste streams on a conveyor belt and throwing it into different bins. And then that gets separated and then it gets compacted into these big squares. And then, you realize those squares end up on a container ship and get shipped somewhere around the world to get dealt with. There's a whole plastic season. So, I mean, I think that's just something that most people don't realize, is that the proximity to a landfill, they just don't even realize how close they are. They don't realize that, you know, right around a corner is a local landfill. And, you know, every once in a while in the morning when they wake up and it smells a little, you know, rotten egg-like or sulfury, that's the landfill. That's, you know, they're flaring, or they're burning and converting that natural gas into energy. You know, they don't know what the blue little CNG logo looks like, what that means on the back of a garbage truck or a bus. That all comes from waste in some way, shape, or form. And so for me, it was just really great to be there, boots on the ground, see what is actually happening, just see the size of it, and then to realize that there are hundreds and thousands of these all around the country, and we have good ones. You go to some parts of the world, and it's just really a hole in the ground with no engineering whatsoever, and it gets into the waste and water streams. It's definitely a pretty incredible moment when you're there.
I mean, that would spark anybody, you know, to want to make a difference. And now you're the founder of We Go For Two. So kind of walk us through the mission and inspiration behind what you're doing. I mean, selfishly, I really want to know the significance behind the name. And then what kind of stuff and what kind of industries are you working with, and what kind of results have you seen?
So We Go For Two is a sustainability agency. So, you know, obviously growing up in sports and growing up in baseball in particular, when you go for two, you know, that's, you're stretching something you already have in the bank, like a base hit. Mm-hmm. You're going for more. Like that base hit, you've already got that in the bank. You got a hit. That's going to count towards your stats. Let's stretch it out. Let's see what else you can do. And I think when I was starting my company and I was looking at names, and I was always saying, we got to do this. We got to get together. You know, you could do this with us, we together, all these we's, very team oriented. And all of a sudden you're like, wait a second, like, that's it. Like, we all have to go for two. We all have to take a little bit extra. We have to go a little further. And then obviously it's a nod to the 2 degrees Celsius that we're all trying to stay under here, you know, to try to keep our planet at a habitable level. But, you know, We Go For Two is really about being a platform for organizations to come be the best they can be while others do what they do well. And that all contributes to this greater goal of working towards whatever we're working towards, whether that's reducing waste or increasing our water efficiency or just making it more publicly aware of what's going on and giving people more access and more information to not only see their impact on the world, but to give their kids and their parents and their friends access to do the same thing. And that's really what it's been about, is how do we use what we already have? What, you know, very Apollo 13, like, this is all we have.
Right.
You know, we can't always depend on creating something new and innovative. Like, let's be innovative what we have. You know, so for me, it's really about taking that extra step, doing a little more. You know, you could sit back and be happy with that base hit, but a double's great. And that's really kind of where it all kind of sparked from.
I've heard you describe We Go For Two in some of the programs before, like it's a personal trainer to run your business more sustainably. And I really like that analogy. How do you develop and break down like a program, let's say for like a minor league baseball team? How do you get started?
Well, just like any good personal trainer, or any good coach or, you know, analyst would do, is you got to assess what's there. And what's great about, you know, most sports facilities is, you know, from, you know, the average person, they kind of all look the same. They run the same, they have the same attributes, but really they're all individually unique. They're all snowflakes in their own way. You know, they all have different contractual agreements with their local city, or they have different utility agreements. And, you know, some organizations don't even pay for the utilities. It's all kind of engrossed in their lease. But, you know, what we really do is we get in there and we just get a baseline. We have a couple industry partners we work with who we get set up to do benchmarking. So a lot of it is just, you know, if we compare it to like a personal trainer, let's get your height, let's get your weight, let's get your body mass index. Let's figure out what makes you you. Okay, now let's see, you know, are your shoulders a problem? Do you have issues with your hamstrings? You know, all of a sudden you start to realize like, hey, a lot of the work is just identifying, you know, what makes you unique. And then from there, we like to build the program to fit their desires and what they really need most. You know, some teams, they need, you know, more focus on water. Some need more on HVAC, or They're trying to increase ticket sales through social media. You know, so those are all things that we take into account, because really it makes it the easiest for these teams to transition into a sustainability kind of program. If it's not just siloed, if it's not only focused on LED lights or water reclamation, you have to really encapsulate all of that together. Otherwise, it's very, you know, it's kind of like a funny way to say it, but it's very check boxy, if that makes any sense. It's like, oh yeah, we did that today. It's like, well, now you have another game tomorrow and another game the next day and another game the next day. How do you continue that down the road? How do you set pillars and foundations? So no matter what's going on, here's our solid foundation. You know, you could do a bench press, but if your arms are in the wrong spot, or if you're doing shoulder press and you don't have the right positioning, you're going to do more damage than you're going to improve yourself. And I think for what we see is a lot of these teams are just starving to make this transition, but they don't know where to start. It sounds really expensive. And the teams that do make that transition, they aren't seeing the results they anticipated. So everybody just kind of bails and goes back to the way things are done, and you know, we're stuck. So for us, it's really about just assessing what's there. And then we start to shed light on things that people thought they already knew. And then they realize from a different perspective, with a different kind of mindset, they see things a lot differently.
Well, what are some, like, what are some easy adoptions that you think that, like, all teams, I mean, regardless of league or conditions or anything, can begin to implement if they're not already doing? What are some of the low-hanging fruits?
So I'll give you a perfect example of one. And so I can't remember which ball club it was. I always kind of lose track of what teams it is. But I was talking to the GM, and he's going into some things that they're having issues with. And I talk about kind of that low-hanging fruit, the low-cost, high-impact things that people can do basically day one. And he goes, well, what are some examples of that? And I said, well, is your concession stand run by a third party, or is it internal? He goes, oh, we have a third party. Okay. And do you pay for utilities that they use? Yes. So you know when they turn stoves off or when they unplug the commercial refrigerators, right? He says, well, no, most of the time we're not even allowed in there. I said, okay, so you pay for something but have no idea how it gets to that price point. You just know you pay for it. He goes, yes. I said, okay. Well, the first thing we would do is we would get a hold of what the concessions are doing. We would set just simple guidelines, because what ends up happening is, like, fryers and stoves and ovens, fourth, fifth, sixth inning, you know, they don't need to cook chicken anymore. It's right. There's no reason to waste food. So let's turn the stoves off. Hey, when the team's out of town for a 10-game road trip, we don't need the commercial refrigerators running that are empty. Let's unplug those things. And as I'm saying this, he goes, wait, oh, okay, so another thing I'm thinking of. And I said, okay, this is exactly what I'm looking for. I'm curious where he's going. He goes, so when the gentleman who's outside watering our field, when he takes a phone call for 30 minutes, he shouldn't just drop the hose on the ground running, right? And I said, simple enough, you would think that that would make total sense, but he didn't even see that opportunity until he started getting insight and perspective into another opportunity. So that's kind of the things that we really see as a benefit for teams right away, is just understanding that something you do in one department is going to affect another department, whether you realize it or not. If you implement a recycling program in the concessions area only, that's going to trickle out into the rest of the ballpark, because now that concession stand is going to maybe have a promotion where it's all about reusable cups. Or, you know, they're going to want to maybe put more placards up around waste bins, because now they know that they're being held responsible, but positively accountable for what they're doing. You know, it's not about, like, investigative journalism. It's just like, look, this is not what you're good at. We can fix it simply with just this quick adjustment. And now we can then take full advantage of your investment when you make one, instead of trying to make the investment and then get people on board the investment, and you're still trying to figure out what that even looks like. Instead of, let's get the bare bones settled. Let's get our feet in the right spot. Let's get our hips in the right spot so we can do a squat. Let's not just throw a bunch of weight on the squat rack and then be confused why we're not doing it right. So that's really what we see, is I think sustainability comes as this huge grill in the room instead of this incremental steps that you can really hone in and perfect. And then by the time you're coming up to make a big financial decision, it's much more clear which direction you need to go and which technology or which partners and how that's going to really be personalized to what you guys are doing at your individual ballpark, let's say for a minor league team or something like that.
No, that makes so much sense. I mean, are there franchises, you know, minor league or otherwise, that you think are really setting the example? Is there anyone who's, you know, really doing it right? Or is it still a work in progress amongst the whole organization?
So for perspective, there's 160 minor league teams in the country. Most people don't realize that that's that large of a number.
Yeah, that's a lot.
They have 10,000 games plus a year that are streamed online. They have over 40 million fans a year that come put their butts in the seats. Obviously, this year is not going to happen that way. But, you know, you see some organizations, the Spokane Indians are really, really making an effort with their local utility to partner up and do composting, recycling, and all these things. The Sacramento River Cats, AAA team, they've done a lot of great stuff with solar and stuff like that. But there's also organizations that have stepped out and made big, you know, $500,000, $1 million investments in solar or LED and water reclamation, and all these things. But, you know, they were in Minnesota or the Northern Hemisphere of the United States. And, you know, have to, you know, 3 or 4 months a year, a solar panels are useless. And so that's kind of the iffy part about sustainability is it's about being efficient and sustainable, not just making a bunch of purchases. And because that's what you think you should do. Like solar is great, but if it's the best option, where if you're in a state that gets cold, maybe more of your money needs to go into making sure that we have pipes that don't freeze. So you don't have to heat locker rooms and offices, 5 months a year that have nobody in them because you have to keep your ceiling run water pipes from freezing. So like those are the things where teams and what I'm really focused on is making sure that the teams choose what's best for them, not just choosing what they think everyone else is doing. You know, a team in Arizona, great, solar, let's go. Team in Michigan, maybe a cogeneration or, you know, some other variation of anti-freezing technology or, you know, little IoT widgets that go on pipes so you know when you have a leak and you can shut it off from your cell phone 40 miles away instead of a 10-hour, you know, treasure hunt to try to figure out where this little pinhole leak is. So that's kind of what I see is teams are really looking to make the effort. But if they make the effort in the wrong direction, now we have to step backwards, spend a bunch of money to get back to baseline again and start over. You know, PNC, the Pirates are doing a great job. Obviously, what's going on in Atlanta, you know, they're one of the pinnacles of what's going on with the Falcon Stadium. But, you know, every day a new team is just stepping out. Every time there's a new stadium, they're the pinnacle. And that's kind of the way it's been going so far.
It's so crazy when you break it down, it seems like such a simple solution. You know, like that's the part that keeps getting to me is like, yeah, of course, someone in Minnesota shouldn't have solar and that, like all of those things. And I very rarely have like true light bulb epiphany clicks and I'm like having one right now. And I did want to go back quickly to talk about, you know, the butts in the seats, like you said, you know, with COVID this year is going to be different, but I am curious because sports like minor league ball and MLB and NBA and all of these attractions are really like larger than life and have these incredible fandoms. And what are some things that you think that fans can do to help their favorite team reach a sustainability goal? I mean, when you're consulting with the different franchises, do you guys think of a fan plan or something to get, you know, the butts in the receipt in the seats to recycle their sodas or be mindful of food waste or, you know, turn the water off in the bath, you know, the simple solutions that you're talking about now, it seems like you could or should or probably already do, you know, have a way to communicate that to the people that are paying to see the action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I've realized when you're talking about fans or you're talking about bringing new people into anything, whether it's a party or some kind of sporting event, there's got to be some incentive or, you know, some push, some drive. So our Eco Series program we've basically looked at how do you gamify sustainability? How do you take it from just a business kind of analytical setup of, you know, okay, we got to change this, adjust this, and we'll save this amount of money. It's how do you expand those opportunities so more people can grab onto it so they can expand it further and they can expand it further? What is it? 2, 3, 6 degrees of separation. I don't remember what it is, but so our Eco Series program, part of our scoring system is fans. So they have their whole, they have a whole scoring system set up specifically for fans. You know, vendors have their own, management have one, right. Staff has another one, but fans make it go. You know, you talk about 160 teams, you talk about 43 million fans. That's a lot. And the idea that they are only participating in that game for the hours they're in the seat or in line waiting for concessions, you know, maybe they participate, you know, on social media or a Facebook page, or, you know, they come to like the weekly volunteer events, stuff like that. But actually putting them into the game and scoring what they do. So, for example, what our Eco Series program was doing is we were partnering with a mobile application that would allow us to bring the fans into the game by tracking their own travel to and from the game. So let's say somebody goes, you know, I've been going to the game for 30 years. I drive my car. My kids come. We have our spot in the back that we go and get there early. And we get to the game and we have our souvenir cups. And, you know, those are the people that are going to really bring it in. All of a sudden you go, hey, if you carpooled and brought neighbors instead of them taking their own car, or if you took a ride share, or, you know, once a week, instead of driving a car, you had a family bike trip to the ballpark. You can now use this mobile application to track your carbon footprint reduction. And that would then tally towards the team score. So it behooves the fans and the team to work together to see the more fans we have tracking their transportation, tracking their shopping habits. You know, when they get to the ballpark, they can talk about what hot dogs they bought, and, you know, did they use a recyclable cup or did they buy the ones at the ballpark that day? And all of a sudden now it's more than just tonnage. It's individual engagement. So people now feel directly connected to what's going on outside of what the team is doing on the field. So the idea that fans could feel success along with their team before the first pitch is thrown, that's what we're really excited about. You know, giving fans that opportunity to be directly a part of what's going on and be a part of the success, because you can't, as a fan, be a part of the success on the field outside of just providing energy during a game. But if you could actually be a part of the ball club's success and be one of the fans that's nominated at the end of the year at the winter meetings for being the most impactful in your community, that's where we see it. If you can incentivize and provide people an opportunity to take control of their own lives and benefit from it, and add that to a fanfare and the team that they love and a city and the community that has embraced them and their family, it's only just going to grow further out and out. Because, you know, for example, I remember one of my first things when I first got into sustainability was I was like, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do yet. I know I want to do something with trash, so I'm going to just start grabbing as much of it as I can. So I mapped out, I was going to get like an old ice cream truck, and I was talking to all my friends and restaurant people I knew. And all of a sudden I got people to agree to give me, you know, I was getting hundreds of tons a month all of a sudden. You're like, wait a second. Like, that's, I am directly a part of this now. And so
you were
going to
drive
around
with an ice cream truck full of trash. That was your job.
And that was going to be, like I said, this was like, oh, I'm just going to start, you know, I don't know how to swim, but I'm going to just kind of jump in and see what happens. And like I said, thankfully in doing that, when I would go ask people, hey, you know, would you collect your food scraps? And once a week I'll come pick them up. And I would get, hell no, that sucks. Why would I ever do that? You know, all these like just quick shot downs. Like, no, I don't want anything to do with that. So I said, okay. I went back to the same list and I said, if I could somehow orchestrate where you guys got $10 a week at the grocery store, would you do it? Hell yes. And I'll get my neighbors and I'll make sure they do it. And then so I was like, wait a second, that's 10 bucks. That's 40 bucks a month. That's where it clicked. And I said, oh, that's all this is. People just need to feel like what their energy goes into is going to come back to them in some way, whether it's going to help their kids have better food at school, or, you know, have a cool recyclable cup that they can use, whatever it is. People just need to feel like they're a part of it, not just there to support it, if that makes any sense. And so that's really kind of where all this has gone. And, you know, fans to me are everything. We don't have sports. We don't have what we have when we get to a ballpark without fans. I don't know if you've ever been to a game when there's no fans. It is the weirdest, eeriest thing that you'll ever experience. There is something about the energy and the bodies in the seats, all energy facing in the same direction, that is just so powerful. And as a player, you feel it, you thrive off it. And, you know, it's science. It's proven that that energy really transcends outward. And I don't think it's any different when you're talking about waste or sustainability or anything like that.
No, I think, you know, we're in for a unique sports season this year. And I'm curious to see, like you said, what that's going to look like. I think incentivization is everything. And, you know, we try to do a lot of that too with our customers. Okay, before we sign off, I wanted to play our rapid fire game with you. I'm just going to spout off 10 little quick questions and you just respond with the first thing that comes to your mind. You ready?
Okay.
What does your morning routine look like pre-COVID?
Pre-COVID, a huge glass of water right out of bed, usually a shower or some version of that. I've been really trying to focus this last, you know, 6 months on taking some time in the morning to just kind of get centered and get quiet and just be one with myself. But, you know, get a workout or something in, it was definitely up there. But at one point it was getting up at 4 a.m. in California and connecting with partners back east just so I could be ahead of everything and, you know, get that way. That was kind of my start.
What is one piece of advice that you'd give to an aspiring entrepreneur?
Never stop. It feels like too cliche or something, but it's true. And you have to do something you're passionate about. And if you can find that passion, never stop, because somebody will want to join on if you really are doing the right stuff and you're passionate about it.
Okay. I made you promise that I wasn't going to fangirl and I was going to be cool. And I've been really cool about it. But now I'm going to ask you, give me one behind the scenes secret, one thing about, you know, your time filming Real Housewives of Orange County.
Reality TV is reality in the fact that it's shot live, but there is definitely editing and we'll just say post-production involved.
There. Where is your dream vacation spot?
Ooh. I did Europe a few years ago. That was beautiful and I loved it. Ireland is definitely on the list because that's kind of where my family came from. Man. Yeah, I think it would probably be like Ireland. Obviously, like, you know, tropics is great, but it would be really awesome to see where I came from and things like that.
What is one food you could eat for the rest of your life and never get sick of it?
Chicken.
Everyone always says chicken. That makes so much sense.
I mean, I don't really eat a lot of red meat anymore. I love fish. I used to be able to just inhale pizza, but I've really tried to back off because I just... too much dairy just doesn't make sense anymore these days. But yeah, chicken just is something universal. Eggs you can throw in there, I guess. But yeah, pretty much chicken. You know, everything tastes like chicken, so why not just go with chicken?
What are you reading right now?
Two things. The Medical Medium. So it's all about, you know, nutrition and juice and, you know, a plant-based.
Is that the celery
juice guy? Yeah, the celery juice guy. Okay. And the one I'm kind of refreshing myself on, it's, you know, a little more particular to what's going on right now culturally around the world, is the Willie Lynch letter. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but
yes.
Check it out. It's weird to see a business plan of how to, you know, control people from plantations beyond. So a little weird, a little graphic, but it's really interesting to see kind of where all of this stuff, I believe, started.
What is one eco-friendly action that you do every day?
Reusable bottles. I can't remember the last time I bought a water bottle. I use canteens or cups or whatever. That was my one sustainability move I tried to make about 4 years ago. Was I'm done with water bottles. I'm going to reuse as much as I can, and then kind of trickle out from there.
What was the first concert you ever went to?
Tell you the truth, I've probably been to one concert really my entire life. You know, like a couple like House of Blues things here and there, but I went to Lenny Kravitz when I was like 13. We had a nanny that was a little on the wild side and thought it was a good idea to take a 13-year-old to a Lenny Kravitz concert, which I thought was great because I didn't even know what I was looking at. I just saw great music and people having a good time. And now looking back, it's like, wow, that was a terrible idea. But
yeah,
that was
really
my first and pretty much only concert I've ever been to.
If you could be any animal, what animal would you be and why?
My first thought would be dog, just because I've always grown up with dogs. I don't know, shark would be cool because the ocean is awesome, but it scares the crap out of me. So maybe one of those two.
And lastly, what does success mean to you?
Success. Doing something that you love and doing something that helps others.
I love that answer. Shane, thank you so much for being here today with us. I can't tell you, I mean, first of all, we've been trying to plan this since February, but I can't tell you how awesome it's been to have you on and to get to pick your brain a little bit and hear about all the stuff that you're doing. Where can people find out more about everything and, you know, all things We Go For Two and Shane Keough?
So the easiest is just at Shane Keough. You can find me on pretty much all the social platforms at Shane Keough. Find me on LinkedIn, Instagram, stuff like that. WeGoForTwo.com is where you can kind of find just the basic info, at least to get connected with me. We're not really projecting and putting too much out there just because a lot of what I do is based on intellectual property with tech companies. So we have a few things in the mix. But yeah, at Shane Keough is the easiest way to get me, or Shane@WeGoForTwo.com is an email. I'm happy to chat with everybody because I believe it's going to take everybody at this point. We need everybody's help.
Yes. All right. Now get back to saving the world. Thank you so much again.
Amy, I really appreciate it. I hope you're well. Stay safe. You know, keep us posted on that little nugget.
I know she's coming very soon. That's the scariest part. She's got to come out somehow. Yep.